It's good to be with you. It's always good to be with you here at Vox. I have not really had a chance to just stop. I've had way too much coffee. And so I might have to take a break in the middle of this sermon. Who knows? But I haven't really had a chance to just stop this morning and just take a breath. And so that would be good for me. And something tells me that would be good for all of you as well. And so as I often like to do when I do sermons, I would just like to invite all of us just for a moment of quiet, that God may be the one who comes into this space and that we may be the ones who pay attention not to what I am saying, but to what the Spirit is saying among us this morning. So I invite you just to a little bit of space right now, and then I'll pick us up. The one thing I hate about inviting silence is that I have to be the one to end it because it always feels so good. Yeah, it's so seldom. Today is the day of Pentecost. It's a day that is a significant and marked day in the church calendar, and we will talk about it throughout, you know, the next little bit of time here. But what I want to invite you to think about and imagine with me is just what are recognizable days, what are recognizable events in your life that as soon as I speak the name of these events, you can immediately shape some kind of image in your head. Now, apologies to those of you who might not have grown up in the United States because I did. So these are going to be images that will be more familiar, but some of them would probably be iconic around the world. But if I mention obviously the most straightforward one, and I mention 9/11, I don't have to put a picture on the screen because immediately most of us can conjure up some kind of memorable image from 9/11. Even if you were very young at 9/11, and barely remember it, you might have some kind of image that was replayed over and over. I could mention something like, for me, one of the ones that was very memorable. Many of you will not remember this one as well, but I can remember very well when President Ronald Reagan was shot. I can say that, and I immediately have images in my head of what happened that day as they're rushing and putting him into a limousine. I can talk about two different space shuttles that blew up, and I can immediately pull images into my head as I think about those. And then I can even talk about something that was before I was born, probably before most of us were born, but not all. And I can talk about John F. Kennedy being shot, which apparently was in black and white because that's the image that I pull up when I think about it. But I can pull up these images of these significant events because I know that they shape not just my life, even though I can remember what I was doing and where I was when these things happened, but they shaped the life of us as a people. They formed us. They defined us. And then I can go back and I can say, well, all of these events are somewhat easy, even if you weren't born, like I was not when John F. Kennedy was shot. You pull up an image because you've seen footage or you've seen photos of what happened, so you can pull up an image. But I wonder what happens when we start to talk about something like the Declaration of Independence, the signing of the Declaration of Independence. I can start to conjure up some kind of images around that. Maybe for you, you pull up an image of the Declaration of Independence. Maybe you've seen a copy of it in the National Archives. Maybe you've visited Philadelphia. Maybe you've lived in Philadelphia. And so you've been to where these things took place. And so you drop images, or maybe you just picture paintings of Benjamin Franklin standing there. Right, but you pull up images because, again, you know that these are somewhat significant, poignant events that we have not seen firsthand, but the stories have been told so many times that you have images, you have scenes, you have glimpses of what happened. And what I'd like to do this morning as we talk about Pentecost is I want to lay down backstory for this day that we call Pentecost, because when the Pentecost that we are celebrating today happened in the first century, there was all sorts of backstory for the people who were there and who were present. And just like we have scenes that we can picture, that we know that have formed us, and we know that have shaped us, what happened on that day of Pentecost in the first century in the ancient city of Jerusalem would have been called back many memories and many scenes and many images for those people there. So what I want to do is I just want to take us through several scenes. I think I've got three scenes. They all come from the Old Testament and the Bible leading up to this day of Pentecost. All right, so the first scene comes from Exodus, second book in the Bible, And it says this: on the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning, as well as a thick cloud on the mountain, and a blast of a trumpet so loud that all the people who were in the camp trembled. Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God. They took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended upon it in fire. The smoke went up like the smoke of a kiln while the whole mountain shook violently. As the blast of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses would speak and God would answer him in thunder. So this is a picture of Mount Sinai. This is a modern day picture. I grew up in Colorado, and so for me, mountains are a whole lot bigger than this, right? I was kind of disappointed the first time I Googled Mount Sinai to see what it would look like, because you can see people here, and it's like, this is the backside of it. The front side, where probably most of the people would have been in this story, it actually looks a little taller than this, but this is not, for those of you who have visited Colorado, Mount Massive or Mount Elbert, you know, this is a hill, but it's a mountain. So what is happening in this story then is that these people who we would now call the people of Israel, who had not been their own people for centuries, they'd been in slavery in Egypt for 430 years, and finally they had been freed from that, and they're wandering to go and find some kind of place on their own. And God was saying to them, I am going to be your people, and I'm going to shape you and form you into who you were intended to be. So shortly after they are out of slavery, they came to this mountain, and they're camped out in front of it. And God comes down, and it says the top of this mountain was just covered with smoke and fire, and none of them were to go near it. Now, they ended up staying here for quite a while. What happens right after this is something which we know is the Ten Commandments, which many of us would probably be familiar with, if not all of us have at least heard of. God gives them the Ten Commandments, but then it goes on for many chapters to say, this is how I want to shape you to live. Now, the reason this matters is this is what Pentecost commemorates. And in the first century, as we get to the Pentecost that we're going to be talking about, this event is what they would have been celebrating. So you would have had all of these people come to the city of Jerusalem to remember this, and this idea of this, what's called the giving of the law, which sounds kind of harsh, but it's God saying, I want you to be my people who live this particular way. Maybe a better understanding of it in the way that they chose to translate some of the words centuries ago when they were talking about this, the word that they used was the word namas, which is a Greek word that means somebody's desire or somebody's will. So what happened here is they came to this mountain and God spoke to Moses and said, this is the way that I desire for you to live. This is the way that I will for you to live. I am going to construct this way that you were intended to live as humans and live this out. So they camped there for quite a while. God was preparing the people to be the people they were intended to be. Now, amidst all that, God also gave them instructions and said, you've got these Ten Commandments. They've been written on these two stone tablets. They're going to go in this intricate chest, this intricate Ark of the Covenant, which Indiana Jones later recovered, as you know. And so God said, you are going to carry this with you as this sacred object that represents where I was. And then you're going to create this tent, which is now called, or they went on to call, the tabernacle. And you're going to carry this tent around. And then every time you stop as you're traveling, you're going to set up this tent. And inside of this tent, you're going to put this sacred chest, this Ark of the Covenant. So we have an Exodus, another story here. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud settled upon it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Whenever the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, the Israelites would set out on each stage of their journey. But if the cloud was not taken up, then they did not set out until the day that it was taken up. For the cloud of the Lord was on the tabernacle by day, and fire was in the cloud by night before the eyes of all the house of Israel at each stage of their journey. So we have an image that looks like this. And this would have been all of the people camped in their tents around, and then they set up this tabernacle in the middle. And there's this imagery again of this fire. This is like Mount Sinai to go. It's like Sinai takeout. Because when they were at Sinai, it comes down and there's fire on the top of Mount Sinai, signifying God's presence and God saying, this is what I am calling you to be a people who live the way I want you to live as this nation, as these people who are to be my people. And then they get the instructions. And then as they move on from there, this pillar of fire and cloud travels ahead of them. And then every time they stop and they set up camp and they set up this sacred tent in the middle, this pillar of fire is still there, saying God is still with them. God is still leading them. God is still directing them to who they were intended to be and where it is that they are supposed to go. So as they dedicate this, God shows up again in the fire. All right, let's keep going here. Now, a little bit later, along in those instructions, not only were they given instructions about this tent, but they were also given instructions later to build a permanent version of it, which came to be called the temple. And so ultimately, they came to the place in the city of Jerusalem and said, we will build this permanent version of the tent, the temple, right there in the heart of Jerusalem. So when Solomon had ended his prayer, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. The priests could not enter the house of the Lord because the glory of the Lord filled the Lord's house. When all the people of Israel saw the fire come down and the glory of the Lord on the temple, they bowed down on the pavement with their faces to the ground and worshiped and gave thanks to the Lord, saying, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever. So again, now we've got Sinai, fire, tabernacle, Sinai to go, fire. And then they build this permanent version to, again, commemorate what had happened at Sinai, right? This is an image I found of the temple. It's such a sad image because there's like no people and nothing happening around it. It just seems like it's in this barren wasteland. But this is some kind of representation that some artist made of what the temple would have looked like. A fairly simple structure. It wasn't grand. It wasn't ornate. But here, now we're talking probably about 2,500 to 3,000 years ago, they would have built this building. They would have placed that same chest. And when they dedicated it, the fire came down again. The smoke came down again. It was this sacred space, which only the highest priest could enter one time a year. And all the while, what it was doing was commemorating God's calling them at Sinai to be the people that God had shaped them to be these chosen people who were living the way of God, living this law, living this namas, that God's desire, God's will for who they were supposed to be as humans would be fulfilled. Now, here's what happened. Years after this, that was destroyed. They were not consistent. They were not faithful to what God had called them to be. They did not follow that law. And ultimately, other countries came in and overran them. A very strategic part of the world in the Middle East there, where you've got Egypt and you've got Southern Asia and you've got the Eastern empires, and they all seem to meet and they all seem to clash right there in that part of the world. So when they were not faithful, it just started changing hands. That temple was destroyed. Later, they rebuilt it. They did their best to try to like recover their former glory, but they rebuilt that temple, but there was not any recording then of the fire, of the smoke. The Ark of the Covenant, despite what Indiana Jones would have us believe, was not found. It's never been found. And so this once sacred Sinai to go commemorative place where God was lost. Now I take you through those scenes. I take you through this image of this Hill Sinai with fire and smoke on it, and this tabernacle with this pillar of fire coming up and out of it, and ultimately this temple that stood in the center of this city that was filled with fire and smoke when it was dedicated, because those would have been formational scenes for these people that we are about to talk about for the Pentecost that we will celebrate today. So in the first century, we had this time where Jesus came. Jesus was alive. Jesus demonstrated what it means to live as truly human, as fully human, that this is what humanity was created to be like. Jesus was crucified, common story that many of us would know, and we celebrated it 6 weeks ago. Jesus was crucified. Jesus rose again. And then it says for a period of about 40 days, this resurrected Jesus kept appearing to followers and saying, you are going to continue this. I was killed, but the work that I set out to do is not done. I have been resurrected, and now you will continue it. And then we have this story of what happened, that Jesus appeared one final time and said to his primary followers, the disciples, go to Jerusalem and just wait, because something is coming. So this is a rendering. I've used this picture here probably multiple times here at Vox, because it's just helpful for understanding so much of what happens in the New Testament. But this would have been a rendering of what Jerusalem probably would have looked like in the first century. That white building there in the center is the temple, built up with way more grandeur than it had been in the earlier dedication of it. And so they'd rebuilt it, but then Herod, who was not really a faithful follower of God, he just had a lot of money and he wanted to make really impressive things. Herod built up all this other stuff around Jerusalem. So you've got this big, you know, the Temple Mount was built into this big, huge courtyard where people could come and visit. On the far end there, that's something called the Fortress of Antonia, which is where Roman soldiers would have been garrisoned so they could have maintained the peace. You've got right in front of us, sloping down here, you've got the lower city, which would have been the poorer section of the city, coming up to the upper city, which is kind of what our view would be from, which would have been the nicer section of the city. So Jerusalem in the first century, in the time of Jesus, was a spectacle. I mean, it was a magnificent, grand city, unlike any time that it had been in its history up until now, because Herod had poured all of this money into it. But still you have this temple that even with all of that polish on the outside was never restored to the glory that we found in the prior versions of it, where the fire and the smoke appeared. So Jesus resurrects, talks to his disciples, goes away. He ascends into the heavens, it says. But right before, he tells them, just go to Jerusalem and wait. So they were in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost, on this big national celebration. We're talking probably the scale of South by Southwest or Austin city limits, because you would have had people come from all over the place to come and be there for this festival, this big grand celebration that marked who they were. You also would have had plenty of Roman soldiers there to make sure something crazy didn't happen. Uber and Lyft were there too, giving people rides. Sorry. Zeitgeist, right? That's what we call it. All right, let me take a sip of water here. Losing my voice. Yes. So this is where they are. And it comes down to the day of Pentecost, this memorial of Sinai, this remembrance of God coming to Sinai and saying, this is what it will look like for you to be my people. So now let's look at why we really celebrate as people who are the church, as people who are followers of Jesus. What does it mean for us to celebrate this day of Pentecost now? All right, Acts chapter 2. When the day of Pentecost had come, they were all together in one place. They were all meaning these core followers of Jesus. And suddenly from heaven, there came a sound like the rush of a violent wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Divided tongues as of fire appeared among them, and a tongue rested on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages as the Spirit gave them ability. Hold on to that one for a minute, Marcos. So we go to the first story and we picture Sinai and we picture fire coming down on top of the mountain, and the people are not even allowed to go on the mountain. They have to maintain a perimeter because it says it is this holy place. And then we have this tabernacle that gets dedicated and it becomes this sacred tent of meeting. But it's not because people go in. It's not a church like this, right? And all of the grandeur of Space 12. But it's not a space like this where people go in to worship. It's just a place that represents the presence of God among them. And they know that representation is there because of the fire and because of the smoke. And then they build the permanent version of it in Jerusalem. And the fire comes down at the dedication of that building and fills that space. And again, it's not a space they go in. It's a space where God resides among them. But now, centuries and centuries later, they're longing and they're waiting for this to be this sacred space again. And it says the day of Pentecost came after the time of Jesus, and the fire shows up. But the fire doesn't show up hundreds and hundreds of miles away on Mount Sinai, and it doesn't show up in the tabernacle, whatever might have been left of it somewhere. And it doesn't show up in this rebuilt grand majestic temple by Herod. The fire shows up among those chief core followers of Jesus. All right, so keep going. Now there were devout Jews from every nation under heaven living in Jerusalem. And at this sound, the crowd gathered and was bewildered because each one heard them speaking the native language of each. Amazed and astonished, they asked, "Are not all these who are speaking Galileans?" Which Galileans are hicks. I mean, that really was like Galilee was like the back country. It was not Jerusalem. I don't want to make references to what part of Texas that might be or anything like that. I don't want to offend anybody. They weren't from Austin, okay? You know, so. All right. "And how is it that we hear each of us in our own native language? Parthians, Medes, Elamites, and residents of Mesopotamia." I'm totally making up these pronunciations, but I'm going with it. Just follow along with me. "Judea and Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia." I know that one. "Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya belonging to Cyrene, and visitors from Rome, both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabs. In our own languages, we hear them speaking about God's deeds of power. All were amazed and perplexed, saying to one another, 'What does this mean?' But others sneered and said they were filled with new wine. But Peter, standing with the 11, raised his voice and addressed them, 'Men of Judea and all who live in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and listen to what I say. Indeed, these are not drunk, as you suppose, for it is only 9 o'clock in the morning. No, this is what was spoken through the prophet Joel. In the last days it will be, God declares, that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. Even upon my slaves, both men and women, in those days I will pour out my spirit, and they will prophesy." Hold there for a minute, Marcos. The calling here is for all. This prophet Joel, who had written centuries before about what God was going to do, Peter now stands up, this primary leader or follower of Jesus, and says, all of these promises that we have been expecting are coming true. This prophet Joel talked about men and women, children and adults, slaves. Everyone, no matter who they are, is going to have the Spirit of God poured out on them. All right, and then the last one, I believe. "And I will show them portents in the heaven above and signs on the earth below, blood and fire and smoky mist. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the Lord's great and glorious day. Then everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Men who call, women who call, slaves who call, children who call, grown-ups who call." And so what we have in these scenes is this constant movement by God back toward humanity. That at Sinai, God is coming back toward humanity saying, "I'm calling you still to be the people that I created you to be." At the tabernacle, God saying, "Take this with you. Remember that I'm calling you to be at the temple. Build this space. Let it be this sacred reminder that I am calling you to be." And so now we come to this day where we celebrate Pentecost. We don't celebrate their version of Pentecost from the Old Testament where it's God on the mountain, although we can hold on to that one too. We celebrate the Pentecost that happened that day in Jerusalem, where as they are waiting, as they are longing, the disciples of Jesus are there waiting just because Jesus told them to go and wait because something was going to happen. Jesus said, "The Spirit will come." But there was this expectation and this longing, going back to words like those words from Joel, that God would show up again. And the consistent story that we have, that is the Christian story. That's the Judeo-Christian story, is that God is always trying to move back into the brokenness of us as humans and into the brokenness of this creation if we would just pay attention and follow and join in that work. It's just expressed over and over and over throughout the story of the scriptures and in the history of the church and all the brokenness is there too, as many of us know. So our calling, Vox and Austin Mustard Seed and the church, Our calling is to be this people who are formed into the humanity that we were created to be. That you come and you do this liturgy and you meet throughout the week and you go and you serve, because we recognize that as we come together as individuals who are seeking to be led by the Spirit, that somehow that is compounded into this collective work of the Spirit, where we are shaped and we are formed. And ultimately, our hope and our longing desire is that of the prophet Joel. And therefore, I would even say that of God, is that all people would recognize that we are called to be a certain people and called to live a certain way as those who are shaped and formed by the Spirit. So I just want to leave you this morning, fairly simply, with a couple of invitations to recognize that if we are those, we are among those people who recognize that God's work. So what are our invitations? The first one I have for you, and maybe the first one is for you, maybe the second one is for you, maybe somehow you need to hold on to both of these. But the first invitation for you this morning is just to wait. Jesus said to the disciples, go to Jerusalem and just wait for the Spirit to show up. And maybe for some of you, you are in this time where you were just longing and you need God to show up and you're calling to God and you're saying, would you show up? And maybe the invitation for you still is just to wait. And we're not really good at that. We're not. Especially in a go culture like Austin, we want our Uber and Lyft to show up now, right? And they're not coming. So maybe for you, and maybe you're in this difficult, painful, hard time. You're in a time of grief, or you're in a time where things are not as you intended them to be in your life. And you're saying, God, show up now and fix this. And maybe what's happening right there is God is forming you in the midst of that. And that your role is not to try to run away from it. It's just to wait and let God do the work of shaping and forming in your life. And you bring that pain and you bring that brokenness and that grief and whatever they be maybe with that, and you bring it here, and others are shaped even by your story. So maybe for you, as Jesus said to the disciples, go and wait. Maybe for you today, it is just wait, wait, wait. But trust this story, because God keeps showing up. And maybe God is even there, even as you are waiting, but saying there's still more growth for you. There's still more pain for you to work through, but I will show up. Wait. And then maybe for some of us, the invitation is we need to call. Because it says at the very end of that, from that prophet Joel, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. I was thinking about this. I don't know which of these I'm worse at. I don't know if I'm worse at waiting or worse at calling, because I'm really awful at both of them. And I have many people who I learned from, some of you, and I learned from people in our church community who are way better at both of these things than I am. But maybe for some of you, it's call. Maybe for some of you, it's just recognize, I am not God. I cannot do this on my own. I do not need to do this on my own. Understand this. The Christian story says that God created us to be a particular people who live a particular way. And I believe fully that you will not find the fulfillment that you desire and long for in life until you join into this shaping of who God is forming you to be. And so rather than try to be in control of your own life, and rather than try to just be able to say, I've got this figured out, I just need to put one foot in front of the other and make progress every day. That's my mantra, by the way. And it's not a good mantra all the time. Maybe you just need to call and say, God, will you come and shape me? Because the way that I've been trying to do it is not working. The way that I've been trying to do it obviously is not the best way. And maybe some of you just need to recognize that. Maybe some of you feel like things are going so well that you do feel like you've got it under control. But you will not be shaped into who you were intended to be until you let the Spirit come and be at work. That's the invitation of Pentecost. The invitation of Pentecost is that God is coming to show up. God is coming to form a people. God is coming to call all humanity, no matter where you come from, what position in life, to be who you were created to be. So we celebrate Pentecost today by inviting that Spirit. And soon we will come to this table And as we come to this table, we will recognize that Jesus Christ was crucified on the cross. And we will recognize that that physical body of Jesus was placed into the tomb. But then we will also remember that we are coming out of the season of Easter, the season of resurrection. And in the book of Romans, which Paul, the Apostle Paul wrote, in chapter 8, verse 11, it says, "The same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead is at work in us." So as we come and we remember this body that was broken, this body that was dead, we also remember that that body was resurrected through the work of the Spirit. And in the midst of our brokenness, in the midst of our grief, in the midst of our things that we think are going well, that same Spirit is trying to invite resurrection. That same Spirit is trying to invite life to the fullest as it was intended to live. So my heart, my prayer, my hope for you, Vox, my heart, my prayer, my hope for myself, because I'm so bad at calling and waiting myself, is that you would call on God to come and be at work, that you would be willing to wait through the easy times, wait through the hard times, but in that waiting, you would recognize what it is that God is going to do. Vox, may you be a people of the Spirit. May you be individuals who seek the Spirit in your life, continuing the story of Pentecost, and may you be a collective that as you come together, recognizing and calling out the Spirit in one another, that you would be the same representation as they were. There might not be literal fire, but that people would look and say, there is a people where something is happening, where God seems to be at work. Because after this day, the church exploded because it was evident what God was up to. May God do the same thing now through faithful people.